I'm just coming off of a bout of pneumonia, so that's why I put a sucking candy in my mouth, just to make it through this year. And at any point you want to interrupt, you should feel comfortable to interrupt. I was asked to speak about, well, firstly, if I could just know who I'm speaking to.
Sarah Cousins.
Eliyahu.
Menachem,
Moshe, Aria, Atara, Adina, Tali. All students in YU and Stern?
Yes.
And you're here for a week? Okay, you've all been in Eretz Yisrael previously?
Mm-hmm.
Post high school for a year, etc. Very nice. Okay, I was asked to speak about the topic of business ethics. And generally, the text which is chosen in any anthology of texts dealing with business ethics is the Gemara that is on the page in front of you in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Rava speaks about the fact that L'achar Me'ev Ve'eshrim Shana, every one of us is going to have to answer questions about what we did during our lifetime. And Rava says that the questions are six in nature. Three of those questions deal with the world of Talmud Torah, and then there are three additional questions. The three that deal with Talmud Torah are Kavata Itim LaTorah, did a person, man and woman, they set aside time every day to learn? Pilpalta B'chachma, did a person try to use his intellect to understand things to the best of his ability? Hevanta Davar Mitoch Davar. And that a person try to apply that which he is learning to his life. Those are the three questions that deal with the world of Talmud Torah. And then there's a question of Asakta B'Piriyah V'Rivya, which I guess on the most simple question is, did you get married? But that's a question that L'chorah God knows before we answer the question. But Asakta B'Piriyah V'Rivya, the Marsha explains, is do you try and help a friend get married? What we call the shidduch crisis. Did you try and help someone else get married? Did you try and introduce people? Did you try and network in terms of helping other individuals? Very interesting. This is one of the six questions that's asked of a person in terms of his life's achievements, his life's accomplishments. Tzipita li Yeshua. Did you hope? Did you dream? Did you aspire that you would live in a time in which Mashiach would come, in which the world would reach its fruition, in which everything would return to normal, where in which there would be peace, in which there would be a hierarchy of values. Was this part of your life's dream? Tzipita li Yeshua. Did you go to sleep at night, hoping the next morning that there'd be a different world? That's one of the questions that's asked. But the first question which is asked, Amar Rava b'shasha machnisen adam ledin omrim lo nasata b'nasata be'emuna. How would you translate that if you were Mr. Schottenstein? How would you translate, well, I know Schottenstein just paid for it, but how would you translate that if you were one of the art scroll editors of the Talmud, nasata b'nasata be'emuna? Excuse me?
Where is it?
You have it right in front of you. The front, the first makor. The Amar Rava, Rava stated, B'shasha machnisin adam ladin, when a person is brought into a divine judgment after his death, omrim lo, he is confronted with the following six questions. So let's skip the first one. Kavati itim latorah, we mentioned, did you set aside time daily to learn Torah? Asakta b'piriyah v'rivya, did you help your friends get married? Tzipita li Yeshua, did you dream of salvation? Did you dream of living in a different world? Pilpalta b'chachma, did you try to understand your learning to the best of your ability? Hevanta davar mitoch davar, did you try to apply your learning to your life? Those are the six questions that are asked. What's the first one? Nasata v'nasata be'emuna.
Did you do business faithfully?
Did you do business
faithfully?
You're correct. The word emunah, normally it's translated, did you do business honestly? Did you have integrity in your business dealings? That's usually the way it's translated, but you're 100% correct. I'm sorry, your name again is Eliyahu. Eliyahu is 100% correct that emunah doesn't mean honesty, and emunah doesn't mean integrity. Emunah usually means faith. But what does it mean, did you do business in faith? Well, it's faith is usually not an adjective or that we would use to describe the method in which a person does business. Emunah is something that we have. Ani ma'amin, ani ma'amin, ani ma'amin. We have articles of faith. We have articles of faith about who God is. We have articles of faith about who we are. We're ba'alei b'chira. We have free choice. That's an article of faith. What is the v'nasata v'natata be'emunah? So, generally, you just know that there is a rule of thumb that if we want to know the definition of a Hebrew word, we look for it in the first time it's mentioned in the Tanakh. And the first time that's mentioned in the Tanakh, usually the context would give us the most meaningful definition. So if we were to, like, I'll give you an example. There's a word in Hebrew, gadol, and there's a word in Hebrew, katan. Normally, we would translate gadol as large and katan as small. But what's the first time that gadol and katan are mentioned in the Torah? At ha-ma'or ha-gadol le-memshelet ha-yom ha-ma'or ha-katan le-memshelet ha-layla. What do gadol and katan mean in the context of a sun and a moon?
Strong and weak.
I would say
much more light, one radiates less.
So one is a giver and one is a reflector. One is a source and one is a receiver. That's a gadol and a katan. In other words, that maturity means to be able to give, and a katan, a child, is someone who's still on the receiving end. Zeha katan gadol yihyeh. In other words, that, you know, it's 100% correct. You're also dealing with strength and weakness, and you're also dealing with size. But the core of the definition from the context is that which we speak about in terms of giving and receiving. And so also, if we look in the Torah for the word emunah, the first time that it's found, we have a very unusual context. If you look in the third source, the Dei Moshe Kvedim, that in the battle of Hamalek, we find that the hands of Moshe were heavy. Vayikhu evin vayasimu tachtav, Moshe Rabbeinu sat on a rock. Vayeshev aleha, Aharon v'chur tamchu biyadav mizeh echad u'mizeh echad. Aharon and Hur helped hold his arms. V'yehi yadav emunah ad bo hashemesh. And his hands were emunah for the entire day until the sunset. That's the first place in the Torah the word emunah is mentioned. We have to try and understand, what does that mean? And if we'll ask, where's the first place where the root of emunah, aleph, mem, nun, is mentioned, that goes back to Sefer Bereshit, by Avraham Avinu, v'he'emin v'ashem, v'yechsheveh lo tzedaka. That Avraham Avinu had this relationship of imun, of he'emin, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to understand what v'nasata v'natata be'emunah means, to understand what does it mean to have a sense of business ethics, we're going to have to go back to the understanding of emunah, but I would just like to introduce the definitions that we're going to find with a personal episode from my own life that I think put things very much into context. The definitions that we're going to use are found in the Perush of Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch, on Vayihi Yadav Emunah. It's the bottom of the first page. And in terms of the He'emin Vashem, so for those of you who are fine in the original Hebrew, actually there's no original Hebrew of Shimshon Fol Hirsch. It was written in German. And it was translated both into Hebrew and, if you turn the page over, also into English. So I brought you both the Hebrew and English translations. But again, before, I just would like to share with you an understanding of emunah that I saw that when I read the Perush in Shimshon Fol Hirsch, it very much resonated with what I had experienced. Approximately 3 years ago, my wife reminded me of the requests that she had when we originally got married, that when couples get married, they speak about their dreams. And so, of course, we spoke about our dreams in terms of what we wanted to see in our spouses, what kind of family we wanted to raise, where we wanted to live, what kind of a home we wanted. And she also mentioned to me that she would like, if possible, to go on a safari at some time in her life. And she would also like to go to the Far East. You know, we said, if it works out during our lifetime, that these are two requests that she would like. So about 3 years ago, she reminded me that it's true. I took her out on a safari. After all our kids were married, we went to Kruger National Park in South Africa. And I must say it was awesome. And I highly recommend it at some point in your lives, just to see a world of that without man, just to see a world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how he puts together these huge creatures and how they interact with one another when we're simply spectators from the side, and how everything works out and they live and they die and they grow and they eat and it's just, you know, just to be able to experience it firsthand was something very special. But she reminded me that I hadn't taken her to the Far East. So I told her, well, maybe we could sort of compromise. I really have no desire to go to China or to Japan. But my wife is Israeli, so she has lived here all her life. But I've been living here close to half a century. And there's this phenomena that I think you're all aware of, is that when Israelis finish the army, they travel. They leave Eretz Yisrael for a period of time just to let off their steam, to get, you know, it's before beginning life. After the army, they travel, and most of them take what they would consider to be a trek, you know, go out to nature, to the jungles in South America, to Thailand. And many of them also go to India, to the gateway to the Himalayas, northern India. Manali, Rishikesh, Dharamsala, Kassel. And what's amazing is that those that come back from India come back changed. Many of them are Balei Tshuva, and this is in India. India is a country of Avodah Zarah. You know, many of them are Balei Tshuva, and even those who aren't, spiritually, they're different. They're somewhat charged spiritually. And it always interested me, like, what goes on in India? What happens there? Well, you know, like why is she going to an ashram be meaningful to a Jew? What exactly is happening? So I asked my wife whether she would mind, instead of going to the far East, going to India with me. Would that be a fulfillment of our agreement? So she said she'll try. It, as a parenthetical comment, afterwards she said that wasn't the Far East, and I still want to go. Okay, so that's still on the agenda at some point. But we decided to go and to speak to Israelis, to simply to spend a month in northern India, going from Chabad house to Chabad house, because where are you going to find Jews? So you go to a Chabad house and you sit there, and everyone comes through at some point, and everyone wants to talk, and of course, I don't look like the typical person in a Chabad house. I'm not the shliach in India. And so they like to sit and talk. And in other words, and to hear their stories and what they're doing and why they're there and how long they plan to stay and how they're affected. So in the course of this journey and listening, so we happened to be in a number of Chabad houses. And the common denominator was in every Chabad house, there was this big picture, like the size of that whiteboard, of the Rebbe, looking at what's going on. And every Chabad shliach, be it the husband, be it the wife, be it even the kids, because they go generally as a family, have a sense when they wake up in the morning that the Rebbe is looking at them, that they are really, really shluchim, that they are really messengers, and that they have an accountability for every moment of their life. What are they doing to fulfill their mission? What are they doing to fulfill their particular shlichut? What how are they linking in with who they are inwardly in terms of their interaction with everyone that they're coming in contact with? And it was very it, in a certain sense was fascinating in terms of the fact that people really can be so focused, but also it sort of gave me a sense of putting a mirror to my own life. Do I spend every moment of my life thinking about how I represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the rest of the world? Do I spend every moment of my life thinking about how I can bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a totally non-judgmental manner without any strings attached, totally unconditionally loving every Jew? But that's the way that each of these individuals or each of these families represented themselves. And I was thinking that really that is the concept of emunah. And that's what Rosh Yisrael Hirsch speaks about, and that's where we're going to come back to the world of Nasata v'Natata be'emunah. If you look at the Hebrew or the English, maybe if the English is easier for you, so Rav Shushafol Hirsch points out on the page which has on top of it the pasuk v'hemin v'ashem v'yachsheveh lo tzedakah, that to translate emunah as belief is a mistranslation, because there are two phrases. There's l'ha'amin le and l'ha'amin be. That if a person is listening to someone else and believes him, that's what we call l'ha'amin le, with a lamed. But that's not what it says about Avraham Avinu. It says v'he'amin be. And l'ha'amin be means to live a life, to use the translation over here in English, placing full confidence, setting our whole theoretical and practical hold, our guidance, our strength, our firmness in God. In short, to refer to yourself and all you have entirely to God. That Avraham Avinu gave himself over completely and unconditionally to the direct guidance of God. Namely, that emunah is not a question of belief. Belief is something that goes on inside of your head. Emunah is a question of behavior. It's a question, it's an issue of acting. It's defining the individual's persona, that the individual merges with someone else, that his life is basically to be a reflection of another being. That's the concept over here of emunah. Maybe to just put it a little differently, there used to be a program on TV, I don't know whether it's still on TV, called 60 Minutes. It used to be on Sundays, in which they would have 3 20-minute segments, and the individual who produced the program and who was a moderator was an individual named Mike Wallace. He's already dead. But going back about 30 years, maybe 40 years, my father, Zichron Levracha, was on that program because he was, at that time, the president of what's called the President's Conference of the American Jewish Organizations. And as always, there's an issue of dual loyalties. It was a period that was after the Yom Kippur War, and there had been a lot of pressure on the American government to supply Israel with the arms that it needed to fight a battle that it didn't expect. And the question that was asked of my father, are you an American Jew or are you a Jewish American? Namely, no matter what he's going to answer, he's going to be in a trap. In other words, where are your loyalties? Are you basically an American of the Jewish faith, or are you basically a Jew who happens to live in America? And so my father at first said, you know, it's like asking you, do you love your wife or do you love your mother? That's not a fair question. In other words, I'm an American, I'm a Jew, I'm both. Where's the stira? No. But he wants to understand, is being Jewish an adjective? Are you a Jewish American, or is being Jewish a noun? You're an American Jew. Well, who are you? What form of speech are you? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the words in my father's mouth. He said, Judaism is not a noun, and Judaism is not an adjective. Judaism is a verb. Judaism means to behave in a certain manner. A Jew behaves in a certain manner. And so it's not a question of a Jewish American or an American Jew. I behave as a Jew. It's a verb. I'm not an adjective, and I'm not a noun. That is what emunah is. Emunah is not a question over here of that which we believe in our heads. It's not a question of a thought system. It's not a question of a catechism in the Catholic religion. You have to have X number of beliefs in order for you to get into Gan Eden. That's not what we that's not our religion. Emunah means that we live as Jews, that we live in connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the concept of Avraham Avinu. And when we go back to the first page, that over here is the concept of Vayehi Yadav Emunah. I'm sorry, I didn't translate this section into, or I didn't notice that the English translation. But if you look in the fourth line from the bottom, HaPerushu Yadav, that Moshe Benu's hands, Simlu Emunah. Aharon v'chur hayu liyad Moshe k'nitzigei ha'am. Aharon and Hur represented the nation. Lo emunat hamanhig, that lifting the hands meant that we're not dealing over here with a charismatic leader who somehow is pulling the nation along. Ela emunat ha'am, but rather we're dealing with a collective. Shehamanhig orera, he shevi'a l'nitzachon. Namely, that Moshe Rabbeinu's hands represented his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That his hands lifted means that he was linking his life with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept of Emunah, to go through that, to live through life on a day-to-day basis, on an hour-to-hour basis, on a minute-to-minute basis, in which one feels that he is identified with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that he represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and his values are the values of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenasata v'natata be'emunah is the question that we're being asked is, did we do business as individuals of Emunah? Did we do business as representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And of course, that puts everything in a different context. If you want to define success in business, so making money is certainly a form of parnasa. It's certainly a very nice way of making a livelihood, that we're going to have a profit margin in our business. But no one would say that, in other words, that because the world, the net worth of the world, is worth more now than it was when it was created, so God is successful. Namely, that success in terms of being a tzel Elohim has much more to do with what you do with the money rather than making the money. It has much more to do with how you deal with employees rather than in terms of how much money one is making. It has much more to do with giving people value for whatever they are purchasing than the profit margin. It has much more to do with the concept of making the world a better place than it has to do with a bottom line. Namely, that's the v'nasata v'natata be'emunah. It's not only a question of honesty or a question of integrity. Honesty and integrity, those are mitzvos within the Torah. That's very, very clear. We have an iser of lo tignovu. We have halachos of mishkalos and midot. You know, it's that's obvious that a person is not allowed to cut corners when it comes to his honesty. But the question is, what is his goal in terms of his business ethic? What is his mission statement? Where is he heading? Why is he in this business? What is there a sense of mission? Is there a sense of purpose? I was sitting, it was last Wednesday night, at a wedding with Rav Goldvich's son. Rav Goldvich from YU has a son named ETL, who lives here in Yerushalayim, who works for Eish, in terms of he's like their Israeli representative, because he's both an American and an Israeli. And he was telling me that he viewed it so interesting that Israel is a startup capital of the world, because he views his friends who are here in Israel to his friends with whom he went to school in America. And he says that simply the tracks are so different that when he spoke to fellows who were in YU and asked them what they plan to do with their lives, So they're into finance, they're into law, they're into into accounting. That there's a certain track of life, and they're going to follow through to get into that track, into a good graduate school in that track, into a good job in that track, and that is going to enable them to provide for their families in a nice way, send their kids to day school, and they have their 5-year plan that's set for them. In Israel, there is no such thing as treks, right? You go to the army. After the army, you travel. And after you travel, you think of what do you want to do with your life. And the startup capital means, I think to myself, I'm sitting in a traffic jam. This is pretty silly to spend my life in a traffic jam. Maybe I can do something to make traveling more easier. Or I see a car accident. That's very, very sad that people are injured when they're traveling. Maybe I could do something to make traveling safer. And one party will come up with Waze, and someone else will come up with Mobileye. That's, in other words, it's a sense of what does the world need? Not what track do I want to be in, but what does the world need? What could I do to make the world a better place? Now, sure, if I come up with a good idea, I'm going to become wealthy. But it starts the other way around. I'm not into finance. I'm not into law. I'm not into accounting. I'm into trying to think of what's missing in the world, and maybe I can come and fill that in. For some people, it's being involved in Kiruv. For some people, you know, coming up with an idea. Like ETL himself, he simply said, you know, it's very interesting. The old city during Hanukkah is a very, very beautiful place because everyone lights Hanukkiot outdoors, and it's very quaint. And everyone has their own unique Chanukiah. And maybe I could take people on a tour on Hanukkah of the old city and then bring them into Eish HaTorah and give them an inspiring evening. Namely, to think of what could make these people more connected to their Judaism, taking what's there and simply putting it together. That's the Menasata Venatata Be'emunah. Namely, I'm looking for a job. I'm looking for something in business. But I want to have an idea that the world will be a better place afterwards. I know that the phrase Tikkun Olam is very worn out cliche, but Letaken Olam B'Malchut Shakai is not really a cliche. That's the concept of emunah. That means that I'm here in this world for a purpose, for a mission, and I want to figure out how I can accomplish that mission in the best possible manner. Natata v'natata be'emunah, to try and think of the emunah, of how I can merge with the Kadosh Baruch Hu within my business world, within the area that I want to either innovate or that I want to try and tweak in a little better manner. And that's, you know, it's pretty much, it's just an amazing Jewish ethics. You know, it's not only a question, it's always an issue of how one distinguishes or should distinguish or should not distinguish between Israel and Judaism. But here, it's all one and the same. People don't define themselves in terms of denominations, in terms of Judaism. Everyone is Jewish. Everyone is Jewish. Everyone has a relationship to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Some people do more mitzvos ma'asiyos. Some people, beintayim, are doing less mitzvos ma'asiyos. But everyone has that feeling of the fact that I'm in that there's a purpose, that there is a mission. I'll just end up, I'm sorry, my time is up already, but there's a beautiful story that I printed out for you, that there is an individual, a Jew, Howard Schultz, who was, I think until very recently, the CEO of Starbucks, and worth $3.1 billion or something like that, whose parents were just immigrants, and he received the Columbia Business School's award in business ethics 17 years ago, okay, in the year 2001. And in that year, he gave a speech in Columbia University, and the speech is brought in the Columbia Business School Journal. I forget the name of the journal. It starts with an E, but I forget the name, I'm sorry. And it was summarized by Eish HaTorah in one of their articles. But I went back to the original in the Columbia Journal of the business school, and it's all there. In which he ends his speech, in which he, with a visit that he had to Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir. Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, Nate Finkel, was a kid growing up in Chicago, went to Ida Crown Academy, played basketball, and came to Eretz Yisrael and found out that he's part of the Mir Yeshiva dynasty, that his uncles and cousins were running this yeshiva, and he put himself into the yeshiva totally, became a Gaon Olam, simultaneous with having Parkinson's disease. And he died not that many years ago, less than 10 years ago, but going back 17 years, when Mr. Schultz came to Eretz Yisrael, he was on an Eish HaTorah mission, and he came with a number of other American businessmen, and he was asked, would you like to meet the Rosh Yeshiva of the largest yeshiva in the world, even larger than YU, a yeshiva with 6,000 Talmidim, larger than Lakewood. You know, it's a huge yeshiva. And they said, yeah, a CEO. CEO is like CEO, someone who's running a school of 6,000. So, but no one told them that Rabbi Finkel had Parkinson's. And when they walked in and they saw that he was unable to control the spasms of his body, and it was difficult for him to talk, so they all sort of did not look at him in the eye. So he said, I know it's difficult to look at me, or Nosson Tzvi said, I know it's difficult for you to look at me, but I have a message for you, and I want you to internalize this message. Just one thing, and I'm asking you only one question. What do we learn from the Holocaust? What do we learn from the Holocaust? So one of the CEOs said, we learn never again. What does it mean, never again? Never. We're never going to forget. We're never going to be victims. We're never going to be powerless. We're never, etc. So he told them, you got it all wrong. What we learn from the Holocaust is as follows, that when Jews were ripped out of their homes and put into cattle cars and treated like animals and in sub-zero temperature were squished together and they were starving and they were dying and they were freezing, then the doors opened up and they thought they were coming to a war camp. And they realize this is not a work camp, and there are selections, and the men are separated from the women, and all of their clothing is taken away. And finally, they get to a barracks, and when they get to the barracks, totally exhausted and totally frozen, one out of every six is given a blanket, and he has now a choice. He has a choice. Should he just take that blanket he was given and cover himself, or should he find five other Jews who don't have a blanket and covered them all? And he said, in the Holocaust, every Jew divided his blanket to five others. And so Rav Finkel turned to the group of CEOs and said, this is my message to you. Go back to America, take your blanket, and divide it to five others. Give what you have to five others. That's the Nasata v'Natata be'emunah. To think of a different perspective on life. To think of a perspective of what I can do to help the world, to make the world a better place, to give of that which I have, to use the talents that I was given in a manner which is uniquely mine, which is uniquely mine on one hand, and would be a reflection of a Kaddish Baruch Hu in the most essential manner on the other hand. So this then is my short message to you when you're going around Israel on your fact-finding tour. Remember that the first question that will be asked L'achar Me'ah V'Esrim is not, were we honest in business? That's were we a Jew? But Nasata V'Natata Be'emunah, did we try and be godlike? Did we try and represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our business dealings? Did we try and think of, is there a purpose in what I'm doing? Is there a mission? Is there a task? Am I a shliach? Am I a messenger? Who is here with someone looking over my shoulder, not necessarily a Lubavitcher Rebbe, but a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to see what I'm doing with the talents that he gave me. Okay, the Yu Yadav Emunah, that our hands should be a symbol of this Emunah. Should have Bracha V'Atzlacha. You could do it.